Why, hello there. It is Eric Erickson here. It is 6 after the hour. The phone number, if you want to be on this program, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. President Trump is headed to Georgia this Saturday. There's going to be a rally in Middle Georgia at 6 p.m. Herschel Walker, who is President Trump's pick for the Senate in Georgia, is going to be on stage with him. I got called by a couple of reporters, one a text message about Herschel Walker's campaign in Georgia. There's a rumor floating around that Walker is largely going to avoid having to be one-on-one or be where he can be questioned, kind of run on his name ID and protect him. And they want to see if I've heard that. I have not heard that, but that is the rumor circulating out there. He is going to be on stage with the president. There is a difference between one-on-one with the crowd and being asked tough questions than being on stage. But he's going to get a lot of notoriety by being on stage with the president, as is Burt Jones, a good guy down in Georgia running for the Georgia Senate lieutenant governor spot. Jody Heiss, friend of mine in Congress, running for for Secretary of State in Georgia. So those are Trump's picks in Georgia. But a couple of people, one of whom is rather close to the president's campaign, says there is one criticism. There is one concern. Can anybody guess what it is? The president of the United States, Donald Trump, going to a rally in the middle Georgia area, Perry, Georgia, Saturday night at 6 p.m. Anybody guess what the concern is? I would not have guessed. I got to admit, I would not have guessed that this was a concern. But now that I've heard the concern, and this from someone close to the president's team, it is a concern and might be to blame for the lack of buzz. There is not a lot of buzz about this trip. I didn't even realize that he was coming. So there was a rumor he was coming to Georgia. He's going to be like 30 minutes from my house. There's a rumor he was coming, and then they denied the rumor, but now it's definitely official. He is coming, and it's going to be on a Saturday at 6 p.m. college football. I know, it's ridiculous. College football. What college football games are Saturday? I did check. Georgia is playing in Vanderbilt. They're going to be playing at noon, so that won't be a problem. But, yeah, so Georgia's playing Vanderbilt at noon. What are the big games that night? Well, there's the Nebraska-Michigan State game, UCLA-Stanford. Yeah, there's the Georgia State-Auburn game, Oklahoma State. There's the Tennessee-Florida game. Yeah, I guess Phillip's going to want to watch that one. There's Alabama and Ole Miss. And there's UNC Georgia Tech. I just think if you're going to come for a college football game, that's kind of the week that you're going to want to come is because, and they can do a watch party as well, for some of these football games down there and make a big production out of it. I'm just looking, there really aren't a ton of exciting games that night. I mean, does anybody really think that Southern Miss is going to beat Alabama? No. West Virginia, unrated West Virginia, is going to beat Oklahoma, the number 4 team? Probably not. Akron going to be give Ohio State a run for its money? Nah. I guess it's an off week for LSU. So, I mean, listen, if you're going to come to Georgia on a college football night, coming on a Saturday night when none of the games are really impressive, probably is worth coming. Phillip, I'm apologizing in advance for what Florida's going to do to Tennessee. But nonetheless, he will be in Georgia. Now, while that's happening, there's also going to be a rally for January 6th happening at the Georgia Capitol. And here's the thing you need to know about this. I don't actually think this is a very serious thing. I'm sure the media in Washington, D.C. will somehow make this a big deal. So I got an email. I'm a little bit cautious to even really talk about this and give it too much attention, but I got an email that there's going to be a January 6th rally in Atlanta, Georgia. It will be this weekend. Now, again, keep in mind, the president of the United States, Donald Trump, is coming into Georgia, and he's going to be rallying in middle Georgia. It's a bit of a hike. It's about a two-hour drive from Atlanta to down where that's going to be. And the people who are in charge of this event in Atlanta aren't telling you who they are. They're sending out a press release saying they want people to come to this event, but they're not actually attaching their name to it. It's just some PR firm out of South Carolina that wants you to know that they're coming. So I haven't heard about this rally at all. I didn't even know it was a thing. Judging by 100 people showing up in Washington, D.C. for a rally up there for January 6th, I can't imagine that many people are going to show up in Atlanta, Georgia, for some sort of it's just it's not going to happen. There's not going to be a big shift. There's not going to be a big crowd. There will be more reporters there than not. But what this is notable for are a couple of things. One, it shows Donald Trump is willing to get back out on the trail. Two, the lack of major conversation out there doesn't mean there's not going to be a crowd, but there also doesn't seem to be immediately a massive amount of fanboyism, for lack of a better term. There will be a distraction with football to a degree, college football, even though there aren't massive games. Some people will be home to watch. I know some people who they gotta watch football. But then there's this. As much as Donald Trump has tried to find someone to beat Brian Kemp, the governor of the state of Georgia, Republican, he can't find anyone. He hasn't been able to find anyone to run against Brian Kemp. So there's a guy in Georgia you may have heard of. His name is Vernon Jones. Vernon Jones wants to be Donald Trump's candidate. It's kind of a damning indictment against Vernon Jones that Donald Trump will not endorse him to run against Brian Kemp. Maybe it'll happen, but they're trying to find other people to run against Brian Kemp. I know several prominent people who the president's team or the president himself called, and they did not. Oh, wait a second. They're not on the list. Thank you, David, for texting me that LSU is playing. I don't see it on the list. I've got the list in front of me. Thank you for telling me. I would have missed it otherwise. It is Google. You're failing me, Google. Nonetheless, yeah, LSU is playing this. Well, I mean, yeah, okay. My brother-in-law is a Mississippi State fan, so that's going to... All right, I'm distracted now by football. Everybody should be distracted by football. Nonetheless, here's the problem, and I'll wind this down. There's no reason to keep talking about it. President Trump is going around the country trying to find people to nurse grudges. He's found a candidate in Wyoming to take on Liz Cheney. President Bush, George W. Bush, has announced he'll be throwing a fundraiser for Liz Cheney in Dallas, Texas. It'll be a Bush versus Trump fight. If I were the Cheney fans, I would be a little bit concerned, in large part because in Wyoming, it's a very pro-Trump territory. It has been very pro-Cheney, but I think Trump, no pun intended, trumps Cheney there. And having Cheney tie herself to George W. Bush, who over time the Republican Party has evolved away from Bush, I'm not sure that's good for her. But again, who knows about the caliber? I don't know the caliber of the candidate running against her. If it's a bad candidate, Cheney can probably destroy her. I mean, you don't ever want to go up against Dick Cheney. I'm just telling you that. You don't ever want to. Then there's the Arizona situation. Donald Trump is trying to find someone to beat the Arizona Attorney General. There's a candidate out there that Peter Thiel is backing. You know, he's backing J.D. Vance in Ohio. I forget the name of the guy he's backing in Arizona. Younger guy, finance guy, but the Arizona Attorney General, the latest polling has him dominating everyone. And in fact, forget the polling, the word on the ground in Arizona is that the entire Republican machine, even those who are very pro-Trump, are actually backing the Attorney General of Arizona. One of the main reasons that they're backing the Attorney General of Arizona is because of the lawsuit that went before the Supreme Court. Brnovich is the Arizona, Mark Brnovich. And it was Brnovich versus somebody. I can't remember whom. But it was the voting rights case out of Arizona. And Brnovich fought it all the way to the Supreme Court. And in so doing, he won. It was a huge victory in the U.S. Supreme Court. Yes, Brnovich versus the Democratic National Committee. The Supreme Court upheld Arizona's election laws that restricted ballot collection and threw out votes that were cast in the wrong precinct. Brnovich took a very big safeguard election integrity position. It was a 6-3 decision. He's kind of the hero out in Arizona right now. Even if Donald Trump doesn't like him, they're having a really hard time finding someone to run against him for the Senate. Now this is important here. If Brnovich wins the Republican primary, he probably can beat Mark Kelly. The reason is because he's very popular even with moderates. Brnovich is with moderates and independents in Arizona. And as Mark Kelly has gotten to Washington, he's actually moved to the left of Kristen Sinema. And Kristen Sinema used to be a code pink activist. Let's not forget this. Kristen Sinema is playing the moderate, but she's actually a code pink activist, or used to be, when she was in the House. Blake Masters, thank you, Philip, is the Peter Thiel guy in Arizona. And, there's just as an aside here, Peter Thiel, I'm a little skeptical of J.D. Vance. He seems like a good guy. But he was I was too critical of Donald Trump in 2016 and didn't support him. But when I hear J.D. Vance talk, he's pro-union, he's pro-big government, he's pro-Obamacare. I'm like, how are you a Republican? And the bro conservatives online, the people who identify themselves by their social media presence, they've all rallied to him. But I'm kind of skeptical when you're a pro-union, pro-Obamacare former Democrat who really hasn't changed your positions except on Trump, and Peter Thiel is backing you, and I am a Christian social conservative, and Peter Thiel is very much a libertarian, and now you've got Blake Masters running a similar platform in Arizona. I don't like the appearances there. Give me some concerns, and I'm actually intrigued by J.D. Vance's candidacy, because he certainly does seem to have captured the zeitgeist of where a lot of Republican voters are right now. It's just, I don't know that I'm there with embracing a lot of Democratic positions from the 1950s and 60s, particularly unionization. I think unionization would be regressive in the United States in the private sector. It would slow down innovation in the private sector, raise costs in the private sector. And in fact, I think right-to-work states have thrived in business where union states have not really thrived. And I would hate to go back into that era. But I'm keeping my eye on Vance because he does have some intriguing ideas, even if a lot of them are harnessing the power of government to force conservatives' way on America. I just think there are more of them than there are of us long term. And so if we start setting these precedents instead of using the courts to keep them from imposing their will on us, that we're going to ultimately wind up one day and wonder how we really did lose the country when we set all the precedents that the left seizes on, because frankly, there are more of them than us. We're just blessed by the fact that most of them don't go vote usually. So keep your eye out there, particularly as President Trump continues to try to rally candidates to beat people like Brnovich in Arizona and Brian Kemp in Georgia. Thus far, not successfully, but maybe he'll find somebody. Congressman Chip Roy just sent me a note. He just put this on Twitter. After months of failure by the Department of Homeland Security and Secretary Mayorkas to answer questions, I filed a resolution of inquiry, a privileged motion in the U.S. House, requiring action under the rules to force a vote demanding answers. House Democrats just changed the rules to deny me that vote. They do not. I don't know that they realize they got a problem. You want a sense of the problem? You need to listen to some audio here from CNN.
This is something we haven't seen before. This camp inside of the United States with thousands of people. What is the reticence to call something that is so clearly a crisis, a crisis?
I call it a heartbreaking situation. A tremendous challenge.
But not a crisis. When you have Breonna Keeler on CNN saying it's a crisis, you know it's a crisis. By the way, I got to pause for a moment and say hi to Parker. I know he's listening on WSB in Atlanta. Parker is a young man I met at a restaurant who we wanted to get him into the radio studio, and then COVID hit, and we've never been allowed people into the studio ever since. But Parker, one day when the world calms down, you will be in studio with me. I know you're listening right now. Your granddad just texted me. So hi, Parker, and one day we'll get you in the studio. Now, one day I would like to have in the studio Secretary Mayorkas to say, really, man, really, you don't think this is a crisis? The guy, let me play you just one more clip. This is the Secretary of Homeland Security Mayorkas himself.
8 to 1,100 known gotaways, which would equate somewhere over 300,000 gotaways, known gotaways for the year.
And I should pause. He's under questioning in Congress, but listen to this.
If you annualize these figures, been a couple hundred thousand people per month, we'll be up to about 2.1 million apprehensions. Add the getaways, 300,000 to 400,000. We're up to 2.5 million people. You have repeatedly stated that our borders are not open, that they're closed. Do you honestly believe that our borders are closed?
Senator, I do. And let me speak to that.
Do you really believe the border is closed? I do. He really believes the border's closed. My goodness gracious. All right, I want to go to the phones. John, you're going to be up first today. Thanks for being patient with me. John, welcome to the program.
Hi, Eric.
Hi there.
You were speaking earlier about education and the fact that you were speaking earlier about education and the fact that in Illinois, they don't want charter schools.
Yes.
To me, that's tantamount to child abuse. And also, it is discrimination. Plus the fact it's lobby support for the Taliban, which Joe Biden deals with.
Well, Taliban's out there telling girls they're not allowed to go to college now. That's a report out today, John. And in Illinois, you've got the teachers' unions there don't want kids to be homeschooled, and they don't want kids to go to charter schools. They want them to go to only public schools, not public non-charter schools. Yeah, there's a reason for complaint and grievance there when it comes to this. The fact that they want homeschool parents to essentially have to show their work, that show qualifications. In fact, if you'll recall, a couple of years ago, the teachers unions in Illinois tried to make parents pay teacher union dues. That was their one scheme. The unions and the Democrats are deeply hostile to homeschools. Now, why? They cannot indoctrinate your kids if your kids are taught by you at home. Now, I know people who are liberal and homeschool their kids because of various dynamics around their schools closing and whatnot. They're still liberals. I know some people who live out in rural parts of the country who homeschool their kids, not as a religious or a political view, but because it's too far for their kids to get to school. You know, the Pioneer Woman, Ree Drummond, it wasn't political for her, wasn't religious for her. Her kids lived so far from the public school out in Oklahoma that she homeschooled her kids. In fact, she was a great resource while her kids were in school for homeschool materials. And again, it was all part because I think it's like 30 minutes just to get down their driveway. They live out in the middle of nowhere on a huge cattle farm. It made it very difficult for them to go to school. And so they homeschooled. It wasn't a political statement. It wasn't a philosophical worldview. It wasn't a religious thing. It was just they live far from. I know multiple people like that. And yet the Democrats want them all to go to public schools, which is unfortunate. I have useful data for you. Which two states in the nation, you know what the R number is, RT, the rate of transmission, the reproduction number. So you look for the R coefficient. If it's at one or higher, it means a virus is spreading. If it's below a one, it means it is slowing its spread. If it's if it is far below one, it's going away. What two states in the nation have the lowest rate of transmission now? Florida is in number one. Its R number is 0.49, which means it's pretty much going away. And number two is Georgia, 0.58, which also means it's largely going away. Now, which states have the highest? You've got DC has a 1.54, which is a pretty significant rate of transmission. Minnesota has a 1.31. So they're really spreading in the wild pretty significantly. But it's good news in Georgia that the number is going down. I would suspect for Florida and Georgia, you people haven't really heard your national or local news headlines point out that your rate of transmission has gone down. Have you? No. No, you have not. Just keep that in mind. Hunter Biden, it turns out the story was true about his laptop. Now, I say it that way, and you need to follow along with me here. You and I have known since the story hit that the story was true. You and I have known for some time that Hunter Biden on his laptop had all sorts of scandalous pictures of himself smoking crack or doing drugs or some such with prostitutes and all sorts of stuff about Hunter Biden. We also knew, for example, that Hunter Biden was trying to structure a business, and in structuring the business was trying to give his father a part of the business and trying to work his dad, angle his dad into the situation. And at the time that it happened, the national political press said, well, we're sorry, we can't verify the story's true. We can't run the story. It might not be true. National Public Radio, in fact, ran a story on why you weren't hearing about the Hunter Biden story from them. They took a very smug position that they couldn't verify that it was actually really true. It was actually kind of, well, annoying, disgusting, whatever you want to use. Here's the New York Post from April of earlier this year. National Public Radio has corrected an online article that falsely asserted that documents from first son Hunter Biden's laptop had been discredited by U.S. intelligence. A book review of Hunter Biden's memoir, Beautiful Things, initially dismissed the documents, first reported in October of last year by the New York Post. The laptop story was discredited by U.S. intelligence and independent investigations by news organizations. The book review by Ron Elving, senior editor of NPR, initially claimed. The correction on Thursday, this again, April of 2021, says a previous version of this story said U.S. intelligence had discredited the laptop story. U.S. intelligence officials have not made a statement to that effect. And yet National Public Radio insisted that there was no reason to cover the story because the story was in some ways false. Remember, they ran with the Christine Blasey Ford allegations, and they ran with all the other allegations as well about Brett Kavanaugh that turned out not to be true, but they blocked coverage of Hunter Biden. Now, according to Politico, it turns out there are a lot of corroborating details that show the Hunter Biden story was true. Here is what you got to understand. During the campaign in 2020, William Barr, the Attorney General of the United States, kept it quiet that Hunter Biden was under investigation. Now, he did not do this, as some of the president supporters who loved William Barr until they didn't, speculated. He didn't do this to protect Hunter Biden. It actually is well-settled precedent in the United States that if someone is under investigation by the Department of Justice, during a campaign season in particular, you don't make it public. If it might impact the campaign, you don't do it. That was one of the grievances that the Democrats had in 2016 about the way the what's his name from the FBI, the former head of the FBI, went after Hillary Clinton. It was not for him to do that. He was not supposed to make that public. Now, the FBI director at the time reasoned that because it had leaked Hillary Clinton was under investigation for the email scandal, he needed to make it clear and correct the record that the investigation had concluded there was nothing. And then, because he had made it public that the investigation had concluded nothing, when there were more details to be investigated, he had to come out and say, wait a second, we're still investigating. The Democrats blamed James Comey before they blamed Russia for costing Hillary the election. They blamed James Comey. Comey, you will notice, finally disappeared. He tried to write that book about Donald Trump and all and use his Twitter account to get fawning praise from the Democrats. The Democrats were livid with him. they would not embrace him because they blamed him before they blamed Russia for Hillary's loss. Well, the norm is that the federal government, if you're in a campaign and someone close to the campaign is being investigated, you don't talk about it at all because you don't want to be accused of disrupting the campaign. So the Justice Department wouldn't come out and say they were investigating Hunter Biden. The Biden team denied that any of this stuff was true, and the media ran with it. Hook, line, and sinker, the media took the bait. Not only did the media take the bait, but Twitter itself blocked the New York Post Twitter account for reporting on what was on Hunter Biden's laptop, even though we now know they were telling the truth. Now, there's a larger story here we need to pay attention to. There's a growing distrust of the media in the country. They are gatekeepers for partisan information about the left. They want to protect the Democrats at all costs. I mean, look for example, at this story today. According to the COVID Estimator website, Florida has the lowest R rate in the country. Florida's rate is below 0.5, which means the virus is not only not spreading, it's actually receding in Florida. Georgia is in second place at 0.56 or 5.8, which also means the virus is not spreading in Georgia. It's receding in Georgia. If the number's below a 1, it's receding. The lower below 1, the faster it's receding. You heard the media repeatedly attack Ron DeSantis in Florida and to a degree Brian Kemp in Georgia for refusing mask mandates and the like. You heard the media attack Ron DeSantis regularly about Regeneron and monoclonal antibodies. It turns out he was right. You heard and saw 60 Minutes try to reframe a story to make there look like there was a scandal with Publix when there wasn't. And now they're not talking about it at all. They're not talking about the northern states seeing a big COVID surge. The media have become gatekeepers to protect the Democrats. And that causes distrust. Part of the media bias in this country is not what they report, it's what they don't report. The media did not want to report on Hunter Biden at the time. Not only did the media not want to report on it, they tried to silence people from even covering it. And yet again, here we go, another story that's proven true. And they do this with COVID as well. You know, yesterday there was a doctor on one news outlet, Dr. Ostrom, I think he was on CNN. He actually claimed that COVID is killing kids at a higher rate than the flu.
You know, this is a challenge that all of us are confronting. I mean, the facts are one out of every 500 Americans has died from COVID virus infection in the last 18 to 20 months. This will soon, in terms of number of deaths, surpass the worst catastrophe we've had in this country ever in our history, which was the 1918 influenza pandemic. The fact of the matter is that this is killing kids right now at a rate much, much, much higher than our worst severe influenza years.
You got that? There have been 159 children died of COVID since January of last year in the United States. So a year and more than a half, a year and 9 months. Less than 200 kids have died in the last flu season, which only the last 6 months, 200 kids died. This is now the new talking point out there. Anthony Fauci himself said this yesterday.
So even though relatively speaking, compared to an adult, they do not get as seriously ill, we have lost more children from SARS-CoV-2 than we ever lose for influenza. And we vaccinate children against influenza.
That's not actually true. That's not actually true. I've tried to find this data, and the data is not true. Kids are now with the Delta variant getting more sick, but the research isn't there yet. This is from ABC News. Health experts said the research on the impact of Delta isn't solid yet. It's possible the Delta variant is so wildly transmissible that children are facing repeated exposure. It's also possible that people have grown more careless. Dr. Edward Behrens, chief of the Division of Rheumatology at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, says a big issue is that people wrongly assume kids were never at risk in the first place. Children are at risk, but they tend to actually do better against COVID. The New York Magazine ran a piece on this. the headline, "The kids are all right. Why now is the time to rethink COVID safety protocols? The kids are safe. They always have been." It may sound strange, given a year of panic over school closures and reopenings, a year of masking toddlers and closing playgrounds and huddling in pandemic pods, that according to the CDC, among children, the mortality risk from COVID is actually lower than that of the flu. The risk of severe disease or hospitalization is about the same. This is from July, and the data has not changed, even with the spread. COVID seems to spread. This is now from the CDC. COVID-19 seems to spread more easily than flu. However, as more people become fully vaccinated about COVID, against COVID-19, the spread of the virus that caused it slows down. Compared to the flu, COVID-19 can cause more serious illness in some people. COVID-19 can take longer to show up even after it has been contagious, but it does not impact children as aggressively as the flu. Why is Fauci suddenly saying this? Why is this other doctor on CNN, Dr. Osterholm, saying this? The data doesn't seem to back it up. So now take the totality of the stories here for just a moment with me. The media says you can't talk about Hunter Biden. Twitter shuts down the New York Post account. It turns out the story's true. Dr. Fauci comes out and says kids are dying at a higher rate of COVID than the flu. That's not true. The media touts that. Other people point out that the death rate for COVID is to some degree overstated. The media gets mad when you point it out. It turns out it's true. The data has come out now and said at this point, masks actually only have about a 10% efficacy rate in slowing COVID. The media doesn't want you to talk about that. They insist that everybody needs to be masked. The data and the real-world scenarios often contradict the media, and the media and social media groups are censoring people who are telling you things that actually are true. And then the media plays catch-up later and says, oh, our bad, turns out this is right, after they've already censored other people. Can you understand why people, there's so much distrust in the country right now with the media? Nobody can believe anything. So when the media, for example, comes out and says, listen, the election wasn't stolen, how can you believe the media? The media got all the other stuff wrong. I actually don't think the election was stolen, but it's a great example of why people who believe it is won't be convinced by a media that censors stuff that is true if that stuff might hurt the Democrats. How can you believe them? You can't. The media has lost moral credibility. And as they've lost moral credibility, they've lost the ability to convey the truth to people, because no one actually believes what the media says anymore. And this isn't just on the right. This isn't just conservatives. Even progressives are having this problem with the media. They're realizing that the media is aggressively censoring things that are true in order to protect certain people. It undermines the full trust of the media when it comes to covering everything. If you can't believe the media on this, you can't believe the media on that. The only people who don't seem to realize this are the people in the media who still think they have a monopoly on coverage and truth. And in the age of the internet, they sure as heck don't. But they're not changing. Maybe it would be good for the media to begin restoring some of its credibility by actually being honest and forthcoming and open and covering the Hunter Biden story, except they won't do that, because the thing the media fears more than anything else is a resurgent Republican Party, particularly if Donald Trump is at the helm. They would rather you never trust them again than be truthful if that truth might actually provoke people to go vote Republican. I want to provoke you to go get a new air filter system, air purifying system from Eden Pure. I'm getting such good feedback from people about the Eden Pure Thunderstorm. Those of you who are buying them, in fact, a buddy of mine the other day said he was buying one because he's got a camper. They use the camper a lot. The camper has a smoky odor because they're always out. They're always out doing campfires and stuff. And says he needed to find a way to get the odor out. The sprays were just masking the odor. So he got the Eden Pure, left it in the camper, and he said it worked. Got rid of the smoky smell in the camper. He was very impressed. I use it in the kitchen when I'm frying, because we don't have an exhaust vent in the kitchen. You can use them. In fact, you can get three of them, one for upstairs, one for downstairs, one for your RV or your basement, wherever. Go to EdenPureDeals.com today. and you will click on my name, Eric Erickson, and see the Eden Pure Thunderstorm 3-pack. Put it in your cart, and at checkout, you'll see a little box. It says discount code, and you put in Eric, E-R-I-C-K, and the number 3, E-R-I-C-K 3. When you do that, you will get $100 or $200 off. So you will get the 3 Eden Pure Thunderstorms for less than $200. You will save $200. You will get free shipping, and you can clean the air in your house. And it's filterless, so you don't have to buy a filter subscription, which is where so many of these companies make their money with Eden Pure. You just wipe it out on occasion. It's filterless. You go to EdenPureDeals.com, click on my name. At checkout, you put in Eric and the number 3, Eric 3, E-R-I-C-K 3. Save $200, get free shipping, get 3 Eden Pure Thunderstorms. The phone number, if you want to be on the program, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. We got to have a chat about something. I want to read for you something from the Wall Street Journal. The headline is Startup Firms Help Home Buyers with Bidding Wars with All Cash Offers. Some companies front buyers the cash to buy homes outright. Others buy homes directly on a buyer's behalf and then sell them to the buyer. When Nestor and Tracy Eugenio decided to move to Northern California, they worried about landing a home in such a competitive market. Eugenio's plan to take out a mortgage, which is often a disadvantage when pitted against all cash buyers who can close quickly. So they turned to Fly Homes Inc., which helps buyers with less cash on hand make all cash offers. The Seattle-based startup bought a 3-bedroom house in San Ramon, California for $1.525 million in May on the Eugenio's behalf, then sold it to them at the same price a few weeks later when their mortgage closed. We weren't the highest, but we had the best terms because we had the cash offer, Mr. Eugenio, who competed against 5 other bidders for the home. In today's frenetic housing market, buyers who take on mortgages are struggling to compete with those putting up all cash. Cash offers are more attractive because there's less chance the deal will fall through or be delayed due to financing issues. Now, a number of startups are offering programs to help level the playing field. Some of these companies front buyers the cash to buy their homes outright, while others buy houses directly on a buyer's behalf and then sell them to the buyer. The programs often target homeowners who need to buy a house before selling their current one. Sounds great, doesn't it? Sounds great. But is it really a sustainable option? Doesn't it suggest there's serious distortions in the housing market right now? Or there's the story about college kids buying Bitcoin with their student loans? That none of this stuff sounds sustainable to me. I'm afraid there are problems coming as the market gets too cavalier. I want to talk about that when we come back.